Vasudevaya. Thank you. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're continuing our study of Gaudiya Varnashram. From the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And chapter 11, the perfect society, the four social classes, and of course in the next chapter, we hear the four spiritual classes. And we've had a little introduction about this, and just a little discussion how this Krishna consciousness movement is based upon the Srimad Bhagavatam of the Bhagavad Gita. Which of course is the essence of all Vedic knowledge and is the from where we find the teachings that are propounded by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu introduced the Sankirtan movement, which is the prime engagement in Kali Yuga, is Harinam Kirtan. Be done congregationally, and so we're studying the Srimad Bhagavatam in order to understand the Sankirtan movement. And one of the things that we will find as we're studying this Vedic culture is which we're bearing in mind for the essay we'll write on the unit. Is how the Sankirtan movement, which is the only process in Kali Yuga, and yet, so we're not asked to do other things. In fact, we're asked not to do other things. And yet, through the Sankirtan movement, other processes, the results of other processes, are automatically fulfilled. As we read through this, this is what we bear in mind. Actually, in a lecture that Srila Prabhupada gave in the 12th chapter of this canto, he speaking about the activities of a brahmachari. And of course, the interesting thing about the activities of a brahmachari is that one may, one may think, some instructions are being given for the brahmachari, so I'm a grihastha or what have you. So, they don't necessarily apply to me. But in Vedic culture, of course, one begins as a brahmachari, and then what they learn as a brahmachari is practiced as a grihastha. So it does apply, So for instance, as a brahmachari, we learn to have complete faith in the spiritual master. Okay? So, as a grihastha, it's not as if, that's for brahmachari. It's something that you learn as a brahmachari, which you keep going through your whole devotional life. See? So, anyway, Srila Prabhupada, in discussing those activities in relationship to some instructions from brahmacharis, he explained how, we don't have to practice brahmacharya separately or these other different, diminishing sleep. We don't have to practice any of those because in the course of chanting Hare Krishna, they're automatically done. So as far as, conquering over sleep, we don't have to practice that separately. We get up to worship the Lord for Mangalari and automatically we're conquering sleep. Mm-hmm. So it's not a separate issue. Similarly, you know, devotees, you know, by attaching themselves to Krishna and following the Bhagavad Gita, they become detached from the material world. They don't have to practice celibacy separately. So, you know, so it's interesting that by this Sankirtan movement, it's not as if we're not doing other things. You know, one may say, chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, you know, that is the only way. But that doesn't, so one should be, you know, a little careful not to misunderstand that other things we're not doing. Other things we're also doing. But we're doing it automatically in the course of following a Sankirtan. So, you know, bear that in mind. This is, you know, a main theme which will be there in your essay. And so Srila Prabhupada, you know, in discussing many of these different principles of the Bhanasram, you know, he says straight out that we, you know, many of these rules and regulations followed in the Vedic system, they're not possible to follow now. But then he says, but, you know, by the performance of Sankirtan, many things become automatically done. So we'll see what can be done. See? So that's, you know, we're not separately trying to establish Savanasram. But if we're following the principles of the Sankirtan and things which are important activities in the Vedic culture can be introduced within the society and for the general people, people in general, then we do. So, for instance, Srila Prabhupada mentioned that. So he says, let's see what can be done. you know, by the grace of the Lord Chaitanya Sankirtan movement, some things we may think, oh, how extraordinary that some of these things from the Vedic culture are now being done because we're doing Sankirtan. So, for instance, when Prabhupada was in Bombay, well, generally when Prabhupada was in India, I think in the early 60s, he was trying to establish a Gurukul so that, you know, young boys would be trained up as brahmacharis, and then, you know, he would be able to train them in Krishna consciousness and they may assist him in the Sankirtan movement. And so he would ask people, "Can I? You have so many sons, just give me one." And he said he couldn't. They wouldn't give him even one son. Whereas in Vedic culture, that would be unusual. You know, that they you know, wouldn't send their son. So so he gave that example how the Vedic culture is not possible. So then, when he went to the West, then he got so many of the sons, of course. Through the Sankirtan, they came themselves. The parents really didn't even want them to go. And then he established a Gurukul. They established you know, Vrindavan, I think, and then he said and Dallas. And then he said Dallas first, and then he said, then we'll have one in Vrindavan, and we'll have one in Bombay. Like this. So as you can see, that initially, trying to establish Vedic culture without the Sankirtan, even a great personality like Prabhupada cannot be done. Then, by the performance of Sankirtan, all of a sudden these things in Vedic culture are being done. So we're studying that chapter in this, you know, in this light, how it relates to the Sankirtan movement. And therefore, they're not to be rejected as if, well, this will never happen in our society, so why take interest? That's the point. That, you know, even if they can't be established in their original form, the principles are still being maintained in the Sankirtan movement, the same principles, even though some of the details. And so as we go through, we'll look at it like that. I bet a couple of, what's the bet? Some of the, I'm not a betting man, some of the students will come in, or we talk, and they go,
How does that relate to the Sankirtan movement?
I'll have to say, you'll have to listen to the class on the internet. Okay. So we got up to, what verse were we up to? 14, that's right, yeah, because I haven't got my bookmarks. So we discussed general principles for all human beings. and then we discussed, being... the reformatory methods, and how that the twice born, meaning the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, worship the Lord, and they study the Vedas, and they give in charity. In this system, they follow the principles of the four ashrams, and that. So. These essential items that when one becomes purified, they're able to and they're inspired to worship the Lord. So Vedic culture, the main principle is to worship the personality of God, placing the Lord is in the center. So I'm just paraphrasing verse 13. And to worship the Lord, that is not done whimsically by mental speculation, but is done by the approved method given in the Vedas. And they give in charity, which is offering everything to the personality of Godhead, and the Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas and the temples. And just making sure that everyone in society is properly maintained and people are not becoming greedy or possessive. So, and it begins, instruction there that really the beginning. As Prabhupada says, in the Varnashram system, the first ceremony for purification is Garbhadana. So the Prabhupada says, the whole Vedic process is to help one become detached from sex. The whole Vedic, it's a very big, intricate system, social and spiritual system. And the overall, transferring one's attachment to the Supreme Lord and away from sex life. That's the big thing. The more, as one becomes detached from sex life, then, one is becoming, it is a major advancement on the spiritual path. And attachment to sex life is a major stumbling block. So the whole Vedic process like that, you can just look at it, it just detaches. And so... From the very beginning, this Garbhadana Samskara only used sex life for producing children like that. And therefore, this training from very childhood like that. So, that verse 13 is quite an important summary of the principles of Varnashram. And of course, when that is not followed and sex life is unrestricted, then all hell breaks loose. You get the Varnasamkara, and this is in Bhagavad Gita. This is one of Arjuna's main principles in not wanting to fight the war. Is he was thinking, of course, that if we destroy the elders within Vedic culture, Vedic, the culture will be lost, and then, you know, you'll have the pollution of the women, the unrestricted sex life, and then you get the Varna Sankara, and then everything you try and do in society will be destroyed by these children born of unrestricted sex life like that, which is what we see in the world today. So to maintain the Vedic society, there must be the Gavardhan Samskara. And then you get the good children who can be trained up and purified. Okay, verse 14. For a Brahmana, there are six occupational duties. A Kshatriya should not accept charity, but he may perform the other five of these duties. A king or Kshatriya is not allowed to levy taxes on Brahmanas. I have to write to the government about that one. Next time one of the premiers comes here for lunch, I'm telling him. But he may make his livelihood by levying minimal taxes, custom duties and penalty fines upon other subjects. So in the purport we see Śrīla Viśvanātha Chakravarti Thakura explaining that of the six occupational duties of the Brahmanas, three are compulsory: studying the Vedas, worshipping the deity and giving charity. Now, by teaching, by inducing others to worship the duty and by accepting gifts, the Brahmanas receive the necessities of life. So they're the other three. Says there, a Brahmana cannot take up any professional occupation or duty for his livelihood. The Shastras especially stress that if one claims to be a Brahmana, he cannot engage himself in the service of anyone else, otherwise he at once falls from his position and becomes a Sudra. And we see that Rupa and Sanatan were ostracized from Brahminical society for that reason. It's also described there, unless a Brahmin is very pure, he cannot accept charity from others. Charity should be given to those who are pure. Even if one is born in a family of Brahmins, if one acts as a Shudra, one cannot accept charity. For this is strictly prohibited. There are some things that we do as a Brahminical society. Many of our Brahmanas work in IT and different jobs. Technology.
So when that is Sudra
Vedic. Yeah. It's interesting because Srila Prabhupada said that on that point that he was asking for a son, and he would train them up to be Brahmanas. And in India, they were saying to Prabhupada, what is the value of our sons becoming Brahmanas? And Prabhupada said they're more interested in technology. So, still today.
But in reality, the Brahmanas most of them cannot engage in Brahmanical activities.
That's their occupation. Very few. And it's one thing because I do get being an astrologer, I get a lot of devotees ask me, they have problems in their occupation.
Mm-hmm.
with the people they have to work with and the things they have to do. And for many devotees, I have, had this discussion with them, especially if they, do become Brahmanas or want to become Brahmanas, and how to mold their life in such a way that they do take up a line of work, if they have to be employed under someone else, they do take up a line of work which is more conducive, and they do have to understand that, as we learn from the Bhagavatam, see, a Brahmana understands that whatever wealth I get is somewhat destined. So, they're supposed to be God conscious. They have faith in God. That's one of the principles of Brahmins, they have faith in God. Now, if there's no faith in God, then there's no faith in their destiny. And therefore, they'll sacrifice their principles for the sake of, I'll take this job. And what I see is that as devotees progress in Krishna consciousness, and they actually get a bit of faith in God and a bit of their destiny, they're willing to take a little risk that, look, I'm going to push for this line of work, which is more in line with a bit more sattvic, and better association and less pressure to be involved. And my understanding is whatever money I get, I'm destined to get anyway. I may as well push for the line of work I want to do. It's very interesting if devotees don't think like that. There must be that faith in Krishna that, I'm going to get looked after. There's certain, even material, there's a certain, amount of wealth, what to speak of Krishna's personally looking at, I must try and work, just take the risk and keep pushing to get that line of work which is conducive to my devotional service like that.
Generally, when you speak to devotees, they say that they are choosing a particular career path which is lucrative so that they get an opportunity to retire earlier because they can earn enough money to wind up. So, need to earn enough money now so that we can have early retirement and then focus on Krishna consciousness.
That if they do it, that's good. Yeah, if they do it, that's good. There is a danger that they may leave their body, before they retire. In which case, they've done nothing but work and put aside their Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
And that has to be factored in, what risk I will take there. That. And then the other factor is that, that always seems like it will happen very quickly. But 20, 30 years goes past like that. And they're still, I'm almost there. and another 5 years, and then I'm going to start studying the Bhagavatam seriously.
Once your body will cooperate
with that. Then they get to the point. Now I'm ready to do some service for Krishna. Only trouble is I've worked so hard, my back doesn't work, my legs don't work. So there's very, very little I can do for Krishna, but I'll try and do something with what's left. It's like Prabhupada says, people retire and they go to Vrindavan. And, there's a little measure of this. There can be a little measure of this, first let me look after my own affairs, and then gradually, Krishna, for sure. coming. And you know, sometimes people retire and they go to Vrindavan. They sell their property, the Prabhupada says, you know, millions of dollars, really, distribute amongst all the family members. They go to Krishna, go to Vrindavan, and they say, "You just send me a little money like this while I'm in Vrindavan."
Mm.
So in Vrindavan, they're spending a few rupees to maintain. That's for Krishna.
Oh.
I've distributed everything, you know, to my relative first, but I'm surrendering to Krishna. I'm going to Vrindavan, fully surrendered to Krishna. But my wealth I've given to someone else, not Krishna. Here I'm bringing a few rupees. So it's an important principle. We are a Brahminical society, a Vaishnava society. This is, again, we're not trying to say live as if we're living in the Varnashram institution, but these principles hold. Because Prabhupada says in his Srimad Bhagavatam and his lectures on that actually you cannot become a Vaishnava unless you come to Brahminical platform. If you don't come to Brahminical platform, you cannot become Vaishnava. Because Brahminical means you've raised from tamas and rajas. You've got to at least get to sattva and then suda sattva. If you never get to sattva, then how do you get to suda sattva? So, which means you're maintaining sattva permanently on the strength of. Brahminical quality, Brahminical quality, there's an understanding and a faith in God enough to, feel that one will be maintained. Prabhupada gives this example of a devotee. Lord Chaitanya said to one devotee, I think his name was Ishan or something, that he lived in a thatched cottage, but, you know, there was apparently no roof and the rain was in. He said, Lord Chaitanya said, "You are such a nice devotee, I want to give you a benediction." "Oh no, I do not need any benediction, I'm happy doing my service to Krishna." He said, "But you live in a home and you have apparently no roof." He says, "You look at the birds, they don't even have a home." at least they have a home. So he was, he was perfectly satisfied. And Prabhupada gives that nice example of a devotee, who actually has, faith in the personality of Godhead, and they're also, they're tolerant, they're simple, and they're completely satisfied by worshipping the Supreme Lord. Like that. So these principles we take. Same as when we did the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we studied about the Avadhuta. Jadbharat, was it? Or Rishabdev. Yeah. So many principles we accept from the Bhagavatam, although we're not trying to be Avadhutas, but the same principles are automatically there. An avaduta stays in one place, and we apply that. We're satisfied. We live around the temple. We don't have to chase. I have to go to the middle of the desert in Arabia to find some wealth, to get some work, to get some money. I'll just stay near the temple. Worship the Lord. Work will come. That's the python. Same principle. So then, instructions for the Vaishyas. The mercantile community should always follow the directions of the Brahmanas and engage in such occupational duties as agriculture, trade, and protection of cows. For the Sudras, the only duty is to accept a master from a higher social order and engage in his service. So, you know, for other types of work, then again, you know, these are pious activities, trade, agriculture, cow protection. And Sudras, they accept a master from the higher social order and engage in his service. So even a Sudra, you know, they become the servant of someone from, you know, nicely situated, an elevated person. It's not that, you know, Sudras just, they serve other Sudras like that. So everyone's born, Prabhupada says everyone in Kali Yuga is born Sudra, and from there you can be elevated and degraded. So actually most are becoming degraded from the Sudra platform. So in other words, they could be elevated to from everyone born Sudra, they could be elevated and become first of all a well situated Sudra, you know, serving someone who's pious. But they serve Chantalas and Milechas and Yavanas and become more degraded from Sudra. Not even following Sudra. As an alternative, a Brahmana may also take to the Vaishya's occupational duty of agriculture, cow protection and trade. He may depend on that which he has received without begging. He may beg in the paddy field every day. He may collect paddy left in a field by its proprietor. Or he may collect food grains left here and there in the shops of grain dealers. These are the four main means of livelihood that it may also be adopted by a Brahmana. Among these four, each of them in succession is better than the one preceding it. So, mentioned in the purport here that a Brahmana is sometimes offered land and cows and charity, and thus for his livelihood he may act in the same way as a Vaishya by cultivating land, giving protection to the cows and trading off his surpluses. A better process, however, is to pick up grains from a field or from a dealer's shop without begging. Elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, you know, it is mentioned that, you know, there are other discussions on Varnashram and, you know, in an emergency situation, there are certain activities that a Brahmana may do, you know, if they're not able to perform their occupational duty. You know, apart from what's mentioned here, you know, there are certain things that they may, you know, there are certain things that even in an emergency situation they should never do, and there are certain things in an emergency situation that they can do. So, now this is not referring to emergency, this is, you know, not here. So this means that sometimes Brahmanas may be given such wealth that they can act like a Vaishya to some degree. But it is saying that there are better ways that they can engage themselves. But sometimes they may do this. But they here is saying that, okay, you're doing that, but bear in mind there's something better. You know, you may sometimes be acting like the Vaishya because of circumstances, you know. But bear in mind, as a Brahmana, you know, there's a more, a higher, more Brahminical way of acting. And then, apart from what is stated here, there sometimes is real emergency or crisis situations or, you know, desperate need, in which, you know, there are other things that the Brahmana may engage in, and yet there are some things they can never do, even in an emergency. But the idea, you know, as is stated, about that emergency situation of the Brahmana, the idea is that when the emergency is over, they start acting like a Brahmana again. And the point here is the same. that for some reason, you know, there may be the vice of duties, but when the opportunity to do the better thing, take it. You know, if someone says, you know, explaining to the congregation, oh, I'm doing this because, you know, the circumstances and the difficulty and the emergency. Okay, that's fine. But when the opportunity, are you seeking for the opportunity when you will be more brahminical engaged as a Brahmin and like that, or not even looking? So these things are there. You know, so in other words, you know, devotees may quote the scripture. Oh, it says in the Bhagavad Gita, you can do this, you can do that. Yeah, it does say that. But it also says there's something better that better, you know, work towards it. And if you're doing it out of, you know, the desperate need, that's okay. When the desperate need is finished, then you go back, you know, work towards it. The brahminical activities. This next verse, except in time of emergency, lower persons should not accept the occupational duties of those who are higher. When there is such an emergency, of course, everyone but the Kshatriya may accept the means of livelihood of others. The occupational duty of a Brahmana should not be accepted by persons in lower social orders, especially Vaishyas and Sudras. For example, an occupational duty of the Brahmana is to teach Vedic knowledge. But unless there's an emergency, this professional duty should not be accepted by Kshatriyas, Vaishyas or Sudras. Even a Kshatriya cannot accept the duties of Brahmana unless there is an emergency. And then even if he does so, he should not accept charity from anyone else. Sometimes Brahmanas protest against our Krishna consciousness movement for creating Brahmanas from Europeans, or in other words, from Malechas and Yavanas. This movement, however, is here supported in Srimad Bhagavatam. At the present moment, society is in a chaotic condition, and everyone has given up the cultivation of spiritual life, which is especially meant for the Brahmanas. Because spiritual culture has been stopped all over the world, there is now an emergency. And therefore, it is now time to train those who are considered lower and condemned, so that they may become Brahmanas and take up the work of spiritual progress. The spiritual progress of human society has been stopped, and this should be considered an emergency. Here is solid support from Narada Muni of the movement known as Krishna Consciousness. And of course, the difference here, as to what I just said even previous to this purport, is that the emergency situation, so here even those from a lower section of qualification doing the work of the higher section of qualification, but Srila Prabhupada doesn't leave them as Yavanas and Malechas. See, he doesn't ask the Yavanas and Malechas to do the work of a Brahmana and leave them as Yavanas and Malechas. He actually, Prabhupada actually trained them, elevated them to the position of Brahmanas. In one sense, while the training period is there, one may criticise, oh, they're from the lower platform, Yavadas, Malechas, and they're doing, you know, the work of Brahmanas. I mean, I think I was initiated as a Brahmana after about 6 months or something like that. It wasn't very long. I was initiated after 6 weeks in Brahman very, very soon after. When I look back on it, it's you know, it's quite a privilege, you know, to be picked up off the street and then all of a sudden you're doing the work of a Brahmana. So you know, one may criticise rightly, but according to this, but then you know, I somehow over 40 years I'm almost qualified as a Brahmana, and So, you know, in the beginning one may criticize, but, you know, Prabhupada's movement is that gradually, you know, people do become a brahminical. And therefore, you know, there's no question of criticism, but so, you know, it's a very interesting. So there it is, you know, here is the Vedic evidences presented in the Smriti, the Srimad Bhagavatam, and the Vedic evidences, to understand the Vedas, we have to understand it through the Smriti. There is Vedic knowledge, gives so much vast information about this Varnashram institution that sometimes, you know, just the main principles may be misunderstood. And, you know, within these few verses, and each verse, you know, just like, you know, Vedic culture, worship the Lord, study the Vedas, and give charity. You know, three principles, hold them. And to be situated in that Varnashram, you know, we begin with the Gavadhan Samskara. You know, just the whole thing, just in a nutshell. You know, and same here, Brahman, you know, we're hearing about Brahmins, touches, Vaishyas, the whole thing in a nutshell. You know, and then sometimes there's different circumstances, all explained. That's the beauty of Smriti, it's just really summing everything up in you know, the whole Vedic process, you know, really succinctly.
So in this one, I mean, there is another aspect that, you know, when we perform devotional service or bhakti, there is no differentiation whether you are born in a Brahmana family or lower caste or Indian or American. There is no differences. But here, Prabhupada is writing that, you know, the Malichas are trained and made into Brahmanas. So, is he comparing to the traditional Brahmanas, or how do we say that, these two aspects?
They're doing the work of Brahmins. They're, you know, they may become Brahmins and take up the word of spiritual progress. You know, we in the Bhagavad Gita, it explains it. A learned person sees equally the Brahmana, the Malecha, the cow, the elephant, dog eater, sees them equally. We see everyone as spirit soul. So that is our principle in Krishna consciousness. We see everyone as spirit soul. That doesn't mean that, you know, we embrace a tiger. Oh, he's a spirit soul, treat him equally. Embrace it. Or, you know, eat the food of the lechers, or disrespect, not treat Brahmanas properly. We see everyone from the spiritual platform, but that doesn't mean that we, you know, have some Mayavad impersonalist philosophy. You know, that we don't distinguish things on the material platform as well. For a devotee to say, oh, everyone is a spirit soul, I can no longer see this spirit soul as a tiger, that would be against Krishna consciousness. Or go up and give him some prasadam, a garland. That'd be very foolish, wouldn't it? So, you know, just because, you know, this is actually, it's a common, problem in ISKCON. You know, when people, feel that they become Krishna conscious, but they they really have no idea what Krishna consciousness is, or you know, how a devotee actually functions. Somehow they feel that, you know, spiritual advancement is equated with not noticing anything in the material world and not differentiating, and it's all minor, and you know, pebbles are pebbles, gold is gold, you know, they're the same. There's gold, there's pebbles, I treat them the same. Now, if I saw gold, I would think, well, gee, that could be, you know, that would be quite valuable for the Sankirtan movement. You know, I could offer that to Radha Balabha and, you know, perhaps build a new kitchen. but you know, if I'm walking down the street and I see a bunch of pebbles, I think, oh, pebbles are the same as gold. Mm. I'll put them for Radha Balabha, they can have that as well. I see just the same as Krishna. Krishna's, you know, he sees everything as pebbles of gold, just give him pebbles. You know, that'd be foolish. Or, you know, in the discussion, and we see, you know, later on in this Bhagavatam, it discusses again, we talk about brahmacharis and how actually in Vedic culture, you know, that brahmachari ashram is there. You know, many personalities. I think the Brahmins touch his voices. Yeah. Yeah, all go to the Brahmins. And, you know, what they learn there is a training which is there for life, which is then practice the principles right through all the other ashrams. So it's not just the brahmacharis do it and then forget it and go to something else. And one of the principles that the brahmacharis learn is that they become very expert. And Srila Prabhupada says, he was saying this in Bombay, that expert, you know, daksha means they know something about everything and everything about something. And everything about something means especially Krishna consciousness, because we're trying to be devotees. But, you know, they may have also other areas of expertise. But a devotee knows something about everything, and that's being expert. And he says, not that because now I've become Krishna conscious, you know, I do not know how to deal with the material world. And this is for brahmacharis, what to speak of grihasthas. So how much more would it apply to grihas? This is for brahmacharis, that they're supposed to become so expert. And he gave the example that, you know, they're dealing very expert with all matters. So you imagine the life of a Vedic brahmachari. The brahmacharis are going twice daily from door to door collecting alms. So they're going to meet so many people from, you know, and you know, different people may ask them, oh, you know, here's, you know, the brahmachari from the temple, and he's being trained up by the guru. You know, we're having this trouble, you know, this problem. Can you give us some advice? They're going door to door, family to family. You imagine how many people will be, you know, trying to get some, you know, a little expert advice from, you know, you have this guru, maybe you can help with it. The life of a brahmachari is not a isolated, you know, they're somehow just stuck in the ashram. So you know, that they should have to become very expert. So Prabhupada says, you know, Krishna consciousness is definitely not that. And he says that one should be, you know, fully conscious and fully aware of everything. So, what was your question again? Say that again. How did you word that?
So, basically, in the process of the bhakti, we say that, you know, all are equal. But what we see nowadays is more of a caste brahmanas, which is the traditionally practiced.
Yes, but within our society, do we, you know, we have to deal with people, yes, from all walks of life. That is expert.
Yeah.
So if we're dealing with a brahmana, we have to be very expert how to deal with a brahmana. Not that, oh no, I don't see you as a brahmana. You know, we don't have that division in our, we don't see people, you know, everyone's a spirit soul, so, you know, I'm not going to deal with you as a brahmana.
Okay.
But when we deal with a brahmana, you know, generally when you deal with a brahmana, you know, sometimes, you know, if I see devotees, I like to go and pat him on the shoulder or, you know, give him a hug or something, and then I think, well, this is a brahmana, you know, I've got to think. Is he about to go into the deity worship to do some worship? You know, am I Suchi?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I have to acknowledge this is a brahmana. I can't just say, oh, he's a spirit soul. You know, he's doing brahminical duties. So, you know, when you associate with a devotee, you have to acknowledge the type of work that he's involved in. You know, generally, you know, when you greet a person and you ask them questions, how are you? You know, there's certain things you speak to a brahmana, certain things you speak to a brahmachari. You know, there are certain things, you know, if I'm with some grihasthas, you know, we may speak a little bit about family life and this and that, which you don't speak to a brahmachari. You know, there are certain things that, you know, they don't need to think about. You know, so we do acknowledge brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, and we have to deal with them accordingly. And that's expert. And that's Krishna conscious. And actually, to have no ability to differentiate materially what is there and call that Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada calls it careless. That's what he says. What a lot of people, you know, bandy around is Krishna consciousness. It's straightforward carelessness. You know, I've had discussions with devotees. You know, I've gone after some devotees. Not really funny, but I've said, I've just picked your child. You know, child's like maybe not quite 2 years old or something. Run from, you know, the courtyard here out, straight out in the middle of the road, not onto the road. I'm just out here. And I've seen the child and I've run out and picked him up. And I've brought them back. I said, your child, I've just picked him up. Oh, thanks. I was just listening to classes, you know. The wife's in there and he's in the doorway, you know. I'm thinking, are you trying to tell me that that's Krishna consciousness? That's carelessness. You know, you're a grihastha and you can't even see what, you know, your activities. How will you see what anyone else is situated? That's not Krishna consciousness. That's carelessness and neglect. So, you know, we see everyone on the spiritual platform, but we also have to properly distinguish how a person is actually situated materially. Any questions? Yeah. That I've seen a lot of, that, and still to this day, a lot. It's prevalent. That, you know, carelessness being passed around as Krishna consciousness. And the interesting thing is that those who are careless will criticize the Krishna conscious person for taking, for being conscious of all the details of material life. You know, even Guru Kishore Das Babaji was criticized like that. You know, someone, while he was chanting and speaking, and someone gave him some a rupee or something, which, you know, he carefully tied in a little knot in his cloth. And then as he was speaking, sometimes he would just check to see if it was there, still there. And one devotee, I think, approached Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. He'd gone there. He said, "I will not be coming back." I thought I was coming to see someone who was highly spiritual, and I saw that he was distracted. His attention was on these, rupees. He was giving class, and still he was looking to make sure that the rupee had not fallen. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta explained that, he takes great pleasure that someone will give him some money and he will feed the Vaishnavas. That's one of the great pleasures of his life, and he would very carefully look after that, because he will use that. "I will serve the Vaishnava, I'll buy them some maha sweets," like that. So he's very careful with his money, and even while he's speaking, he's sort of making sure that it hasn't fallen, like that. So they will criticize someone like Kaukasura Das Babaji for being, aware, even while they're doing spiritual activities. What to speak of us? Bet your bottom dollar they're going to criticize us. people come to my home, and the lawns are all mowed, there's flowers growing everywhere, look out. But I find that, if you maintain a house properly, you do less work. Gokul told me as well. The houses on the farm, when people live in them, they're better, mate. They last longer. When people don't live in them, they actually, the wear and tear very quick. So even though you're using, you maintain something, it lasts longer. Then you just let something go, and nature takes its course. All the mice and the ants and the possums and people and the weeds and the weather and little damage that's not noticed, everything is destroyed very quickly. Slide thinking. Yeah. okay, let's move forward. So therefore, again, as you can see from nice question, that this information is very valuable to us. And several times since we began, we've pointed out a similar point, that although it is relating to the Varnashram, don't just dismiss it as, we're Sankirtan devotees like that, what do we need to, how much do we need to know this Varnashram? We shouldn't be like that, we shouldn't think like that. Because by understanding these chapters, you will understand how everyone is nicely situated and how everyone can be nicely situated, and how if anyone comes to you, because you're a preacher, and if they're having some difficulty, from these chapters you know exactly what is going wrong and exactly how it can be fixed. Because all these little things add up to bigger things. They're all connected with the worship of the Lord. Because we see everything in relationship to how ultimately someone is doing something or not doing something, it is affecting the worship of the Lord. That's how we see it. For instance, again, the brahmacharis, they go out and collect alms. What happens if the brahmacharis don't go out and collect? What happens if people stop giving to the brahmacharis? You might think, they can go and get a job. What's the problem? But What happens, there's a specific Sanskrit word, I'm not sure what it is, it's something like Dvaviksha or something. It means it's a period in Kali Yuga where people stop giving charity to the brahmacharis, and the result of that is that those people are doing that because they're no longer interested in yajna. And when people no longer become interested in yajna, it doesn't rain properly. And when it doesn't rain properly, people suffer extreme difficulty. So all from, oh, the brahmacharis are not being, you know, collecting their alms, we're not giving, it's, you know, who cares about that stuff anymore, you know. From that, the whole society gets thrown. You know, little detail, something we, you know. So we see everything in relationship to how ultimately someone is nicely situated for worshipping the Lord, or they're doing things which are obstructive. And by understanding this, you can preach to anyone in the world. Because the beauty of this is that actually it's the natural system. That whether people like it or not, so we're not saying, oh, okay, you know, this is Vedic culture, what do we care? Still today, you know, there are the intellectual type of persons, the ruling type of persons, the, you know, mercantile type persons in the general world, still today. And therefore, by understanding this, that makes up the whole world. What they shouldn't be doing, and how they can do that in connection with the Sankirtan movement, we can learn from these chapters. You can't give the same instruction to everyone. Otherwise you can't preach. So, reading the next verse. In time of emergency, one may accept any of the various types of professions known as Rita, Amrita, Mita, Pramrita and Satchamrita. But one should not at any time accept the profession of a dog. The profession of Unchashila, collecting grains from the field, is called Rita. Collecting without begging is called Amrita. Begging grains is called Amrita. Tilling the ground is called Pramrita, and trade is called Satchamrita. So it's saying that in emergency times, one may accept any of the various types of professions, but not that of the dog. Engaging in the service of low-grade persons, however, is called Svabriti, the profession of the dogs. Specifically, Brahmanas and Kshatriyas should not engage in the low and abominable service of Sudras. Brahmanas should be well acquainted with all the Vedic knowledge, and Kshatriyas should be well acquainted with the worship of demigods. As Srila Prabhupada again speaks in the purport, Bhagavad Gita 4:13, that, you know, these four divisions of human society were created by the Supreme Lord according to the modes of material nature that were prescribed to them. So they're natural. They exist throughout the universe. So this Vedic principle holds true in all times and places, and we can see, you know, what part of it a person needs to a little assistance in, a little guidance in, which helps them, you know, somehow in taking up the Sankirtan movement. And those things, you know. So, I mean, from here you can see, you know, with devotees, you know, who are perhaps in professional life, You know, we might advise them in all circumstances to be very, very careful of, you know, if you're taking up an occupation where you really have to serve very low-class people in the association of very low-class people, you'd be very careful of that, you know, above all things. You know, okay, you may do this job or that, but that you should not do. You know, that's dangerous. You know, there's difficulty everywhere, but if something is a very degrading environment, better off not to take part in that. And Srila Prabhupada says in the purport that because of the gradual neglect of the Varnashram principles, Varnasamskara population develops, so unwanted children. You know, Varnasamskara is like mixed, isn't it? You know, you can't, it sort of means that you can't actually place a Varna on them. They're sort of, everything is mixed up. You can't, oh, is that coming from Brahmana, Kshatriya? It's all mixed up, so hodgepodge, so. And the entire institution has now been lost. So there you go, Prabhupada says. In this Kali Yuga, practically everyone is Sudra, Kalo Sudra Sambhava, and finding anyone who is a Brahmana, Kshatriya, or Vaishya is very difficult. Although the Krishna consciousness movement is a movement of Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, it is trying to re-establish the divine Varnashram institution, for without this division of society, there cannot be peace and prosperity anywhere. There you go. Prabhupada says it straight out in the purport. Right. A couple of things there. One, we are a movement of Brahmanas and Vaishnavas because the main thing that we are doing is teaching people God consciousness. That is the work of Brahmana and especially Vaishnava. But you know, one cannot come to that Vaishnava platform without coming to the Brahminical platform. And we're also engaging people in the worship of the Lord, and we're accepting charity, which is used in the Sankirtan movement. So he says, you know, it's a movement of Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. And so many people assisting, and we're trying to re-establish this Ivy Varnashram. So not Varnashram without its Krishna consciousness. For without this division, there cannot be peace and prosperity anywhere. So actually he says we are trying to establish it. But we're not trying to establish it separately. We're trying to establish the Sankirtan movement. And by establishing the Sankirtan movement, whatever principles of Varnashram somehow become automatically able to be followed, then we accept that. But we have to see, you know, that understanding the Varnashram means that it's very helpful for Sankirtan. So, you know, we learn about Dhavi Varnashram that you know, detachment from sex life is major goal, major principle, you know, of objective of Dhavi Varnashram Dham. So if we don't understand that, and we're pushing on the Sankirtan movement, the possibility is that you know, we can become like more like a Sahaja movement. You know, we do have to understand that, you know, there is very limited association between men and women in our society as a basic principle of what's proper in society. That's proper in society. The society, the function that has to be there, except for when association with men and women is appropriate for the purpose of, you know, the service to do for Krishna and you know, for social, you know, everything running nicely. So, you know, these, we have understanding, you know, what is proper in the Varnashram, and then we're pushing on the Sankirtan movement and we're seeing that, yes, we're doing this, and none of this is against the principles of the Varnashram. In fact, it's we're satisfying fully the natural system of Varnashram. So that's a good confirmation that the Sankirtan movement is authorized and potent like that. That something which cannot be established, somehow or another, the Sankirtan movement is establishing that which is possible and conducive to developing one's love of God. The same as, Prabhupada says that, Prahlad Maharaj, he was presented as a Lord Nrisimhadev addressed him as Bhadra. Bhadra means, first class gentleman. So, ladies and gentlemen, Bhadra. Subhadra. And he says that devotees are never impolite to anyone. They're never offensive in their behavior to anyone. That's sort of it. And they have all good qualities. He says, if they don't become Bhadra with good qualities and very nice in their dealings, proper gentlemen, he says there's something faulty in their devotional service and they're pretending. Like that. So in the same way, on an individual basis, that we say, oh, everyone's chanting Hare Krishna, but there are actually measures, checks and balances by which you can say the process of purification is working, and celibacy is there and the good qualities is there and cleanliness is there, like that. So on an individual basis, so it helps us to authenticate this person. The Sankirtan movement is proper, and the person is following properly, and therefore Vedic culture, then you extend that same thing to the whole social body. Society is running peacefully, people are engaged in their natural propensities and in God consciousness, then you can say again, the Sankirtan movement is proper, and society is engaged nicely with the Sankirtan movement, and you can see that the principles of Vedic culture are being manifested like that. So it's a measure stick. So it's actually helpful for us to understand that. So we have a measure stick for us individually, and by understanding this Vedic culture, we have a measure stick for the whole society like that. Not that, it'd be the same as saying, we chant Hare Krishna, we're not interested in these Vedic things like, the saying cleanliness and, conquer sleep and so many things. They're all Vedic things, and austerity. They're all Vedic things. We don't care about that. It'd be the same. No, we actually want to know, what we need to know. So we are trying to establish the Devi Varnashram. Principally, we're trying to establish the Sankirtan movement. That is the only thing we're trying to do. And the success of the Sankirtan movement is that, society will live peacefully following whatever principle. They'll become purified to the point where none of these principles of Varnashram can be followed, and they can live peacefully with that. So, that'd be very nice. And of course, at some stage where some of the leaders are actually devotees, then the devotees, instead of saying, what political process will we maintain society? Will we take communism? Will we take socialism? Will we take, the Western one, what are they? There's democracy, capitalism, you know. No. We will manage society through the Varnashrama system, and whatever is possible for society to engage in the Varnashrama system will be done because we're engaging them in the Sankirtan movement and all that. So the symptoms of the Brahmana are control of the mind, control of the senses, austerity and penance, cleanliness, satisfaction, forgiveness, simplicity, knowledge, mercy, truthfulness, and complete surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the symptoms are there. And the ultimate aim is achutta, to always think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna or Vishnu. To make advancement in Krishna consciousness, one has to become a Brahmana with the above mentioned symptoms. Hare Krishna, your little girl, what's your little girl's name? Hare Krishna. Have you seen our little Shalagam here? You want to see? There's Pallad and Nishinya. See there? You've got a big smiley mouth, a chakra at the top, chakra at the bottom, and it's like the joined, the petals are joined. And that chakra there is Pallad. To be influential in battle, so these are the qualities of the chatras, to be influential in battle, unconquerable, patient, challenging, and charitable, to control the bodily necessities, to be forgiving, to be attached to the brahminical nature, and to be always joyful and truthful, these are the symptoms of the chatriya. Being always devoted to the demigods, the spiritual master and the supreme lord, Vishnu, endeavouring for advancement in religious principles, economic development and sense gratification, dharma, artha and karma, believing in the words of the spiritual master and scripture, and always endeavouring with expertise in earning money, these are the symptoms of the vaishyas. Offering obeisances to the higher sections of society, Brahmins, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, being always very clean, being free from duplicity, serving one's master, performing sacrifices without uttering mantras, not stealing, always speaking the truth and giving all protection to the cows and Brahmanas. These are the symptoms of the Sudra. You know, they're very quite elevated, really, aren't they? You know, Sudras. Yeah. Yeah. You know, if we call people Sudras, we're really giving them a compliment. These days, I mean, we're sort of praising them, flattering them above their merit.
They do sacrifice as well.
Without chanting the mantras. The Brahmanas chant the mantras.
So what happens with such sacrifices?
It says here, a sudra may attend sacrifices and Vedic ritualistic ceremonies along with his master, but he should not utter the mantras, for these may be uttered only by the members of the higher sections of society.
What I meant is what is the result? Like, you know, in the Vedic, Brahmanas do the sacrifice for a purpose and that purpose is fulfilled. Mm-hmm. But if the Sudras do the sacrifice without mantras, what is the outcome?
No, but someone is doing the mantras for them.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But sometimes, in sacrifices, they like to chant the Gayatri mantra. You know, the Brahmanas. You see that those born in Brahman families, you know, they sometimes, they like to chant it out loud sometimes when you do the Vedic sacrifice. I say it's supposed, as far as I'm aware, it's supposed to be, you know, you chant it quietly, but they like to stand around the fire and all chant the, and, but when they do, you know, all the sutras join in with them. But everyone does, because everyone knows, you know, the Gayatri, you know, sort of everywhere. But very rarely, you know, do I see, you know, hear someone says, oh, I'm from a Kshatriya family or a Vaishya family, you know, we like to chant the Gayatri Mantra as well. Because evidently they get the Gayatri Mantra, huh? But that the, only the Brahmins get the thread. They do. They also get the thread? Yeah, they do. Okay. What's that? They get the thread, but only the Brahmins do the Gayatri Mantra. That, yeah, that was it, yeah. So they, so the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas have got a thread, but no Gayatri Mantra. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know.
Yeah.
No, they're trained in
Gayatri. That's what I thought. As far as I thought, you're confusing me. As far as I thought, you know, you have to tell me because you know better than I this, you know, what they're doing. But as far as I thought, they all get the Gayatri. Do they all get the thread?
Yeah.
They all get the thread. So is there any, no difference here? That they all get.
The study of Vedas.
But the study of the Vedas, the Brahmins can only do.
Yeah. They may hear Vedas some parts, but not as far as Brahmins.
Yeah, and even if they hear certain Vedas, they're not supposed to teach it.
Yeah.
Here we go. All right, you know now. We all got an education. So, but you don't see, you know, I don't know, I very rarely see Kshatriyas or Vaishyas saying, oh, I'm born a Vaishya family, you know, here's my thread. Only Brahmanas. It's like that part of it, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, it's like it seems to be more rare that they even think about things like that. You know, the Brahmanas tend to, you know, from India, they, oh, I've got my thread, and, you know, got the Gayatri, but others don't seem to even, it just doesn't come up as a...
No, they do. I mean, it's not
in prominent. Some parts, not prominent, but yeah, but they some still do. Yeah. Yeah. Now, to render service to the husband, to be always favorably disposed toward the husband, to be equally well disposed towards the husband's relatives and friends. Geez, some austerities here. And to follow the vows of the husband, these are the four principles to be followed by women described as chaste. Purport, it is very important for peaceful householder life that a woman follow the vow of her husband. Any disagreement with a husband's vow would disrupt family life. In this regard, Chanaka Pandit gives a very valuable instruction. When there are no fights between husband and wife, the goddess of fortune automatically comes to the home. Actually, I quote that a lot. You know, sometimes, again, as an astrologer and just, you know, doing some of the some scars, you do come across a lot of husbands and wife who, you know, fight, and they want to know if I can give them some advice. And that there, when I quote that, it really hits home. Because as soon as you say that, they'll tell you how so much misfortune. They quarrel and they sort of, you know, continue. And it's like their opulence dwindles, you know. They can't concentrate on the work. They start, you know, having, you know, occupational problems, and the income comes down, and so many things. And, you know, they notice. You know, it's like a penny drops. You know, we're having so much misfortune, as the goddess of fortune, you know, she leaves, she won't stay in that house. And then you tell them, you live together, keep your vows of chastity to each other, and all your other problems will resolve like that. And above all things, one thing I quote a lot, and it really hits home to them. And it also hits home because, you know, they know that it's not as if it suddenly dawns on them. It's not as if we're in our home arguing, and, you know, we don't even argue in front of the kids, we don't argue in front of the neighbours, it's just we fight and cat and dog, we're in the house by ourselves. It's almost like who's going to know what's going to be the result? You know? Just turn it down. So they all of a sudden realize that it's not as if we can just do something privately and there's no effect on the rest of our life. They understand that, you know, that especially for people who are materially situated, when their money starts, you know, their wealth and opulence starts to diminish significantly, they'll do almost anything to stop that process, including to not argue with each other. You know, you can counsel them as who, you know, the other process, you know, they, you get counselling, right? You know, who's right, who's wrong, you know, who should do this, you know, like there's so many different things. And they can do that and spend, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars and, you know, nothing really works. You tell them, you know, you'll never be wealthy. All your wealth, all your hard-earned wealth, it goes straight out the back door. If you keep arguing, oh, okay, we'll stop today. It really is. So,
does this also apply to the society as a large? If there are too many problems in society,
not unless they're all married to each other. No, it is specifically the husband and wife. And, you know, in one sense, the wife represents the goddess of fortune. You know, if a man is fortunate to have a good wife, he should understand that the goddess of fortune is represented. You know, her blessings are represented there by his wife. And, you know, for the husband to disrespect the wife, the goddess of fortune will leave. And when we do the a wedding, one of the mantras that are there within the wedding that we always do is that there's a mantra, and then I say to the husband, if you want to know the secret of marriage, you always remember this mantra means that you always remember that your wife belongs to God. So, you know, for both, you know, the women, you know, they're very chaste, and you know, try to cooperate with the husband. And the husband is instructed from the first day of marriage, you always treat your wife with the respect that she belongs to God. And here Chanakya Pandit also explaining that, you know, the wife is basically, she represents the blessings of the goddess of fortune. If a husband is disrespectful to his wife, he offends the goddess of fortune, who's giving him some blessing, some gift. You know. So these things are there from both sides. You know, There are a couple of things within that sloka. You know, that sloka, there's a couple of other things that go with it. That, you know, husband and wife should not argue. Don't let rascals in your home. That's another one. If you will let a rascal in your home, God is the force and will also lead. Oh, you know, so here, it's saying, you know, that, you know, you know, the wife is favorably disposed toward the husband and towards the husband's relatives and friends. If those relatives and friends are rascals, then the goddess of fortune will leave. Also.
So you heard it.
How will you know? You'll know if they're a rascal. So you know, it's not as if there's, you know, the husband can, you know, cheat the wife. If the husband's a rascal and he'll invite rascals home. Then the wife will have to chastise him. And, you know, you know, one should also try to be a little self-sufficient, you know, within one's home. That's also pleasing. You know, one shouldn't have to, you know, one's occupation shouldn't have to be so, you know, one has to leave home too much and travel too far, or, you know, so many different things. You know, there should be the facility for the family to be able to enjoy home life. You know, that work doesn't destroy their home life. You know, that is also a symptom that the goddess of fortune is there, present within the home. So therefore, if the husband works too hard and never comes home, the wife can also, you know, that you keep doing that, the goddess of fortune will leave. You think you're getting money, but you know, is where is the family life? Now, the basic principle for a chaste wife is to be always favourably disposed toward her husband. And the Bhagavad Gita, Strishu Dushtashu Vanishna Jayate Vanashankara. If the woman polluted, there will be Vanashankara population. In the modern terms, the Vanashankara are the hippies who do not follow any regulative injunctions. Another explanation is that when the population is Vanashankara, no one can know who is on what platform. Right? So that's everything is mixed up. The Varnasrama system scientifically divides into four Varnas and four Ashrams. But in Varnasankara society, there's no such distinction. No one can know who is who. In such a society, no one could distinguish between Brahmacharya, Vaishnava, Sudra. For peace and happiness in the material world, the Varnasrama institution must be introduced. The symptoms of one's activities must be defined, and one must be educated accordingly. Then spiritual advancement will automatically be possible. Very interesting. So here is, you know, an overriding principle. One may say that, we reject this Varnasram institution. But one... one cannot say that, yes, I'm doing my duty, but no one can define what I'm meant to do or what I am doing. And this is my contribution to society. You know, you cannot say that. So, you know, if someone says, we reject, you know, this Varnasrama, we reject that. So then, still... it is compulsory that for all members of society that we have to ask, so what will you do? What is your duty? What will you do? And do you agree that certain things will not be done by you? You know, you still have to accept a scientific definition of, you know, you know, these days you can't hold anyone to anything. You can't hold a mother, you know. Don't try and define me as a mother. Oh, so who's looking after the kids? Oh, don't you labour me, you know. You can't define it. They've all, you know, in the name of, oh, I don't, you know, accept your labels, your Varnashram, this, that and the other. Don't you put your duties on me. So who's looking after the children? Who is earning the money? You know, who is doing this? You know, so they can reject something. And of course, in preaching, quite often, you know, you can actually preach about Varnashram without mentioning the word by impressing that point that, you know, people have to understand, you know, what duty they, you know, that they should do, which is makes them best situated for themselves individually and for society and their family. And they have to know, you know, what things are unacceptable like that. No one can avoid that. No one can avoid that. And you can call that, you can label that whatever you want to label it, but everyone has to follow it. And in Vedic culture, they call it Varnashram. So then, if someone says, so, you know, we will pass that law. This is good philosophy. Let us pass that law. No one should instruct the freedom of anyone within our society. Anyone who wants to go to the hospital and start operating on the patients, we will not obstruct your freedom. Anyone who wants to fly the new, you know, jumbo aeroplanes, we will not instruct your freedom. You know, do you think that will work very nicely? And any fool who wants to teach our children, so you ask them, oh, you have children? Oh, you have children. So any fool can go and teach your children, and no one has the right to obstruct their, you know, your little, you know, 6 or 7 year old child is in school and someone is telling them that they should follow ISIS and cut people's heads off. That's okay. It's not a very, it's a philosophy of fools. They do not apply that in their own life. When they send their children to school, they don't look for a school where any hodgepodge person, you know, decide that I will teach children and I'm not even qualified. They look for a school where the teachers will teach their children. They're saying that and they don't even apply it. But the reason that people say that is because I want, you know, they say, I want to have sex anytime I want and not be held accountable. And, you know, that is the main thing. You know. And then, of course, so then that causes a lot of disturbance in society. But that is the real reason why they don't apply it. They don't apply it to anything except the fact that they want, you know, when they want some sense gratification, which is restricted. And who are you to restrict? And that's what, you know, people have that, you know, people, that is a big complaint that people have about religion. Who are you to tell me that I cannot do this? You have accepted some religion. Who are you to tell me what I can and can't? You know, I'm free to make my own choices. This is a bit what people have against religion itself. And yet no one actually would, you know, even dream of allowing society to function in that way. But what it means is that, you know, what they're saying is, I'm engaged in a level of sense gratification that I say is my right, and I don't want anyone to stop me. And if everyone follows that, there's chaos. And actually, everyone is following that, and there is chaos in the world. And you can just go on giving so many examples of people just, you know, doing as they please. We have a president in America who's doing that. I'm free to say what I want and do what I want. No, you're supposed to be the president. Oh, the laws, are they? Yeah. So, a chaste woman must dress nicely and decorate herself with gold ornaments for the pleasure of her husband. Of course, the husband, you know, should be supplying those nice garments and those golden ornaments. Always wearing clean and attractive garments, she should sweep and clean the household with water and other liquids so that the entire house is always pure and clean. She should collect the household paraphernalia and keep the house always aromatic with incense and flowers, and must be ready to execute the desires of her husband. Being modest and truthful, controlling her senses and speaking in sweet words, a chaste woman should engage in the service of her husband with love according to time and circumstances. Any questions or comments? A chaste woman should not be greedy, but satisfied in all circumstances. She must be very expert in handling household affairs and should be fully conversant with religious principles. She should speak pleasingly and truthfully and should be very careful and always clean and pure. A chaste woman should engage with affection in the service of a husband who is not fallen. And there's a very interesting comment there. It says, according to the injunction of Jagyavalka, an authority on religious principles, one is considered contaminated by the reactions of great sinful activities when one has not been purified according to the methods of the Dasavida Samskara. So there are 10 main samskaras, and if one has not done them. However, the Lord says that Namam duskutina mudha papajante naradama, those miscreants who do not surrender unto me are the lowest of mankind. The word naradam means non-devotee. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also said, ye vajase bara abhaktahina chara. Anyone who is a devotee is sinless. One who is not a devotee, however, is the most fallen and condemned. It is recommended, therefore, that a chaste wife not associate with a fallen husband. A fallen husband is one who is addicted to the four principles of sinful activity, illicit sex, meat eating, gambling, and intoxication. Specifically, if one is not a soul surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is understood to be contaminated. Thus, a chaste wife is advised not to agree to serve such a husband. It is not that a chaste woman should be like a slave while a husband is a Naradama, the lowest of men. Although the duties of a woman are different from those of a man, a chaste woman is not meant to serve a fallen husband. If her husband is fallen, it is recommended that she give up his association. Giving up the association of a husband does not mean, however, that a woman should marry again and thus indulge in prostitution. If a chaste woman unfortunately marries a husband who has fallen, she should live separately from him. Similarly, a husband can separate himself from a woman who is not chaste according to the description of the Shastra. The conclusion is that a husband should be a pure Vaishnava and that a woman should be a chaste wife with all the symptoms described in this regard. Then both of them will be happy and make spiritual progress in Krishna consciousness. So we see here that as Prabhupada says, you know, the woman, it's not that a chaste woman should be like a slave while her husband is a Naradama. You know, you know, the this chastity and these good qualities, and you know, you know, taking an assisting role, you know, you know, with the husband in spiritual life, material life, you know, it's an assisting role with the husband in spiritual material life, and being very chaste in that, it's not an opportunity for exploitation. And here the scriptures are saying that, you know, if it is being exploited by someone who's you know, a rascal, then the woman doesn't have to put up with that and be chaste as such a rascal. So, you know, so you know, very straightforward comments by Srila Prabhupada, that you know, and the women, you know, should have high expectations of their husbands, that they be someone that they're, you know, if they're going to be chaste as such a person, then the husband has to have, you know, qualifications, you know, that that he's worthy of having such a wife who is, you know, chaste to him, like that. You know, and still sometimes it happens that marriage is already there. You know, in India, I remember one, you know, there was one, there's a lecture, a conversation perhaps, a room conversation with Srila Prabhupada, and he was in India, and one of his devotees, leading devotees, was saying, Srila Prabhupada, you know, there are some, there was going to be initiations coming up. He was saying that there are some ladies who want to take initiation. They're chanting, following the principles. They want to be devotees. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, they can. And then he said, but Srila Prabhupada, their husbands are not devotees, and they're not following. So Srila Prabhupada said, yes, they can take initiation, and, you know, but they can just keep their principles. So, you know, there we see that Srila Prabhupada understood that they're already married. They want to do the right thing. Their husbands are in this category, you know, so they've, you know, so here they would, if they were following the Srimad Bhagavatam, they would understand, so we have our service to Krishna, we have our service to Guru, there are a certain amount of things that we would do for our husbands as wives, we're not going to divorce. But there are certain things that we're not obliged to do, because we have our principles to follow. So I'll not be cooking the meat, I'll not be serving the meat. And that. In the name of chastity, you know, the Guru has given the instruction, I follow the principles, you know, keep a nice home, but the husband has asked me to do some rascaldom, which is against the principles of my Krishna, I'm not obliged to follow. And, you know, sometimes, you know, sometimes it so happens that some of the women in our movement, you know, are in that situation, and then the husband becomes a bigger rascal, in which case sometimes they even have to leave the husband. Then, like that. But, you know, what Srila Prabhupada doesn't want, that, you know, the first argument with the husband, yes, I'm leaving you, and it just so happens I have someone already lined up. So if one takes a bit lightly and somehow is just literally wanting to get attracted to a nicer partner for the sake of having a nice partner and literally fault finding in the husband, and they become a prostitute. So there's a there's a danger there. The woman who engages in the service of her husband following strictly in the footsteps of the goddess of fortune surely returns home back to Godhead with her devotee husband and lives very happily in the Vaikuntha planets. The faithfulness of the goddess of fortune is the ideal for a chaste woman. So as you can see, if a woman is following in the footsteps of the goddess of fortune and develops those nice qualities, literally she is, the manifestation of the goddess of fortune's blessings in that person's home, the presence through the wife, through the qualities of the wife. So a woman should serve the husband as faithfully as the goddess of fortune, and man should be the ideal servant of the Lord. And a woman should be an ideal wife like the goddess of fortune. Then both the husband and wife will be so faithful and strong that by acting together, they will return home back to Godhead without a doubt. So that's, here we can see this, Varnashram, taking the principles of the Varnashram. When people are following the Sankirtan movement and the husband and the wife learn how to, the husband is becoming a nice devotee of the Lord and the wife is becoming a nice devotee of the Lord also by following in the footsteps of the goddess of fortune, and they can live peacefully, they become very strong on their path back to the spiritual world and very happy and peaceful in this world. So it actually, these varnas principles are promoting their path back to Godhead, back to Vaikuntha. It's not saying they'll go to the heavenly planets. Among the mixed classes known as Sankhya, those who are not thieves are known as Antavasai or Chandalas, dog eaters, and they also have their hereditary customs. Right, so among the mixed classes, Prabhupada says there are two divisions, Pratiloma and Anuloma. If a woman of a high class marries a man of a low class, the union is called Pratiloma. If a woman of a low class, however, marries a man of a higher class, the union is called Anuloma. The members of such dynasties have their traditional duties as barbers, washermen, and so on. Among the Antyajas, those who are still somewhat pure in that they do not steal and are not addicted to meat-eating, drinking, illicit sex and gambling are called Antavasai. Among people of the lower classes, intermarriage and the drinking of wine are allowed, or these people do not recognize such conduct as sinful among themselves. So that is allowed. So, it's not as sinful for such persons to do those things according to, still there are some restrictions. It's more sinful for a brahmana to be drinking. It's not as sinful for them, but still there are certain restrictions. They mention also, that for the aborigines and that in the forest, there are certain things that they do, it's not as simple, that the karma that they receive from it is not as harsh as for those who do that similar activities from the higher qualified sections. My dear Brahmanas, my dear King, Brahmanas well conversant in Vedic knowledge have given their verdict that in every age, Yuga, the conduct of different sections of people according to the material modes of nature is auspicious both in this life and after death. See, in every age, that's interesting. And this verse from Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada quotes, it is far better to discharge one's prescribed duties even though they may be faulty than another's duties. The anchajas, the men of the lower classes are accustomed to stealing, drinking and illicit sex, but that is not considered sinful. Yeah. Interesting. For example, if a tiger kills a man, this is not sinful, but if a man kills another man, this is considered sinful, and the killer is hanged. What is a daily affair among the animals is a sinful act in human society. Thus, according to the symptoms of higher and lower sections of society, there are different varieties of occupational duties. According to the expert in Vedic knowledge, these duties are prescribed in terms of the age concerned. So, you know, sometimes when I'm doing, ceremonies, you come across people of, you know, different backgrounds, and we have to be very careful not to have, you know, a harsh reaction, people maybe engage in drinking, smoking cigarettes and, you know, things like that. That, you know, it's sort of a common affair, you know, for them. But of course, if you see people from, you know, very higher civilized sections of society doing things, then that is worse. When you choose auspicious dates for a wedding, a marriage, you choose those times which are ruled by auspicious stars. But when you, for yavanas and people in this category, you can actually select the inauspicious stars for their weddings, because they engage in, certain inauspicious activities, which is a common affair. So in their wedding, they're going to, you know, after the wedding, they may do, you know, some, you know, they may eat some meat, they may drink, they may do, you know, so many things. You can actually choose the inauspicious stars because, you know, they're engaged in the common activities of those inauspicious stars as a natural daily function. So sometimes, you know, if I quite often have to choose, weddings for different people, and I save certain dates which you know are going to be really popular for the sort of most auspicious situated persons, and other dates, if wedding comes up and I know that the person is not so highly auspiciously placed, I'll purposely choose the other dates, knowing that, if I select the most auspicious, you know, there's a few highly auspicious dates, you know, that there's about a dozen people who are going to call me, I want that date. They all want to get married on that day. So, you know, I'll actually purposely, you know, select dates, the other stars, which is actually, for them, it's actually fine. You know, you can give them those dates, and it's actually good for their wedding, and they have a wonderful day. You know, so still, you know, there are certain factors got to be there which are proper. But, All right, I think we're if one acts in his profession according to his position in the modes of nature and gradually gives up these activities, he attains the Nishkama stage. I think we might leave it there, because now we're sort of talking about the results of, you know, following these, Varnashram principles. So that's a conversation itself. We'll leave it there. We'll take up that conversation next time we meet. And so a little pile of essays on my desk. They're coming. Yeah. And more next week. Yeah. You can give next week if you like. I mean, you can bring it next week. Next week, the exam. Yeah, that's it. And
197.
What's that?
1 and 7.
Yeah, 1 and 7. Chapters 1 and 7. Two slokas and a pile of essays on my desk. All right, we'll see you next week. Yeah, two slokas. Yeah, it's 43 and 44. 7, 9, 43, 44. Thank you.
And the two chapters, 1 and 7.
1 and 7, from the 7. 10 questions. 10 questions, plus 2 other questions, which is the 2 slokas.
Starts at what time? Towards the later part?
Well, I'll make sure everyone's here. I want to make sure everyone's here first, yeah. So, you know, say 3:30. Yeah. You know. Is that all right? Everyone can be here by 3:30. What time? 3:30 is good. Yeah. So we will start at 3:30. Yeah.
What
time? Yeah. I'll be here before that. We can read through. So anyone who, you know, is satisfied with their studies and they just want to attend this, then we do that. What's that? Yeah.